The recordings have started. Speakers, you may begin.
Great. Thanks, JR. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the LPM TMCH question subteam call on the 17th of October at 1800 UTC. On the call today, we have Paul Tattersfield, Susan Payne, Kathy Kleiman, Kurt Pritz, and J. Scott Evans. We have tentative apologies from Philip Corwin and Paul Keating. From staff, we have Mary Wong, David Tate, Maria O'Thomas, and myself, Michelle D. Snyder. As a reminder, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and I will turn the call over to Kathy Kleiman and Jay Scott.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Jay Scott. If you're just joining the call, Kathy and I have agreed that I would run this meeting today. And so I think we have in the window of the Adobe Connect room, for those of you who have Adobe Connect, the suggested questions and the annotations to them in the red line. I know they're hard to read, but you can bump up the size by either zooming in or increasing the size of the font down at the bottom on the toolbar that you see at the bottom. So let's go through. I think on the call, you know, we had decided that there were some of the questions that were good, but they seem to be leading, and they seem to have some issues with them, and so we wanted to work through them so before we present them to anyone. So as I am chair and I am neutral, I'm going to take the questions one by one, see if everyone's fine with it. If they're not, we can have a discussion about what, if any, revisions we feel need to be made in order to get it in a way that we think is presentable for outside our group. So with first, we have the questions from the charter. We see the first question is, should further guidance on verification guidelines for different categories of marks be considered? So that's the question. Is there anyone who believes that there needs to be any clarification or any different language? I see I have a hand up from Mr. Pritz, so I will call on him first. Kurt?
So this is embarrassing, but I don't really know what this question means. And I think if you were in, I wasn't in the group that helped write the charter, so I'm sorry to have missed that. But as somebody who wasn't and reads it cold, I'm not exactly sure what it gets at. And I think it could be more specific or clear. And I really can't ask it any better than that.
I guess I have a question for staff. Is there any way we can go back to members of the charter group or somebody, the chair of the charter group, and ask questions with regards to this? What are you meant by this question? So we can get an understanding of it, because I'm with Kurt. I'm not so sure I understand either. I see Mary's hand is up. Kurt, you need to lower your hand, please. Mary?
This is Mary from staff, and just to answer your questions, and perhaps not in the way that you wanted, these charter questions were not developed by a drafting team. These were pretty much verbatim taken from questions that had been suggested by the community to prior issue reports and reviews of the various RPMs. So there has been no editing, which from the staff perspective, having looked at these since the timing of the issue report, that is why we need to clarify many of those. So one suggestion we have is that if this team and the working group agree that certain questions could be tightened or clarified or edited, that we could send the updated list of clarified questions around the community to see if we got it right. That's probably, we think, the most effective way of making sure that we capture as well as understand what it is that the community was trying to ask. And I see Susan has a hand up, J. Scott.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Susan?
Yeah, hi, it's Susan Payne for the record. Mary, it was just a question, really. Is it possible that the staff member who pulled these questions together would be either able to remember where it came from or would be able to look back? I'm presuming it's in the comments on either the staff draft report or on the draft issue report and identify the context in which that gave rise to this question, because with the context it might be easier for us to work out how to frame this. I don't know if that's an achievable ask or not.
Mary?
J. Scott, may I reply? Yep. So, Susan, that's something that actually I was thinking about, and I can recall at least three very likely sources for these questions. One would be the staff paper on the RPMs from 2015. Another would be, as you said, community responses to the issue report for this PDP. And a third is probably more historical documentation, such as the previous issue report just on the UDRP. I will say that of the three sources, the easiest and actually potentially the most illuminating would be the staff paper, because as I recall, and as I think almost everybody in this call will recall, the staff paper was structured according to each RPM, so it might be relatively easy for us to go back and correlate them. I'm not certain that we would be able to get that to everyone before this Wednesday, or at least even if we can get it to everyone on this group, that we would necessarily have time to review it before the full working group meets on Wednesday, which is, of course, a different problem. But yes, the answer is we can go back and look as far as we can.
Okay. Thank you very much. Kathy?
Thanks, J. Scott. I think today I'll just participate as a regular member of the subgroup. So I think this is interesting. Should further guidance on verification guidelines? I think the key here is verification guidelines, and I don't know who drafted this question. I wasn't part of the charter. I just participated in it like everyone else. I think we need, given that we've talked a lot about verification and the trademark clearinghouse provider's role, Deloitte's role, and verifying, we actually have a number of questions in this category. So I'd recommend changing the category from guidance to verification, because that's what this seems to fall under. We also, and I don't see them here, I might be missing them, we have a number of questions about design marks and the verification of design marks. So I would recommend we create a category about verification. We can call it verification guidelines, a verification process. And this would be one that's related to different categories of marks. We still have to figure out if someone's trying to, I still like the idea of trying to delve into the history a little bit to see if we're talking about use or categories of goods and services, you know, what it is that the drafter or drafters might have wanted. But I think we now have a group of questions under verification processes for the trademark clearinghouse that are going to be useful to look at and may give us an interesting starting point.
Okay, I guess I have a question, because are you wondering about qualification to get into the TMCH? Because it seems to me that verification is only make sure that you hit whatever bona fides are required to qualify.
I would think that's what this question is going to, is how something qualifies or is verified for the trademark clearinghouse.
Okay, because what I'm saying is, let's say we say that only red marks could be in the clearinghouse. Okay, that's the qualification. So it has to be a red mark to be in the clearinghouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then the job of the clearinghouse is to verify that the mark submitted is actually a red mark and not a blue one and not a green one or not a multicolored one.
Okay.
So my question is, this question seems to be asking about verification, not about qualification. So my question is, are you saying that we need to have a group of questions that are around how they verify, or are you saying we need to delve into what qualifies?
I would think it might be a broad category, J. Scott, of qualification and verification. There seem to be a group of questions that fall generally into what comes in the door and then how it goes into the database.
Okay. Could you identify for us those questions so that we can maybe have staff pull them into a grouping and we can look at them all together?
I think that's a great idea. And for the next you know, for the next time we see this list, sorting by category would be, I think, would be really useful. But for right now, the ones that come to mind, and I, you know, I haven't looked through everything with your question in mind, and let's call it now qualification and verification as just a category, would be this one, whatever this question means, current question number one. And then I know there are questions out there, a number of questions about design marks, and wherever they are, they should come in here. This would be a good place to look at those.
Okay.
And they may be in other categories of questions.
With regards to question one, it seems like we haven't come to any point of, well, I see we have another hand up. Kathy, are you finished? I'm going to let Kurt go.
I am. Thanks, Jessica.
Kurt?
Well, you're going to get to the same conclusion after I'm done talking. So I think the question might be about different categories. You know, Mary, I was going to recite the different categories of marks that are allowed in the clearinghouse. There's these three, and I think there's, you know, one, that famous four version of whatever the registries wanted. But so I think the question might be about categories. So I think we're going to get to what you were about to say about needing some clarification around the question.
Yeah, so with regards to question one, I think that we don't know. I mean, it seems to me that what they're – I not having any information other than my limited understanding of reading the words on the sheet in front of me, it seems to me that they're asking whether there needs to be further guidance on the types of marks that are that can be considered for acceptance in the clearinghouse. And it talks, so we could look at different marks, you know, design marks versus word marks versus combination marks, which are design and word. That looks like to me what they're trying to get to. Can we agree that that's what they're trying to get to and craft a question that is clarified that way rather than this question that leaves a lot of ambiguity? Can we as a group agree that that's what this question is trying to get at and craft a clearer question? I'll look for checks or X's or whatever. Kurt agrees with me. So why don't we do this? Mary, why don't you and I take number one under consideration and try to, by the time we reach back to this group, we've crafted a different question that we think gets the heart of what they're trying to ask. But before we agree to that, why don't we get Susan Payne, because her hand's just come up.
Thanks, Jessica. I guess I think this is about verification. I don't think this is about categories of marks at all. It doesn't say anything about what marks should or shouldn't be allowed in the TMCH. It just talks about whether there's sufficient verification guidelines. I don't read it as any more than that, but I wasn't the source of the question.
Okay, so all right, so you don't think it has to do with that. So we need to come to some sort of understanding on what it's trying to ask. I mean, or either we're just going to sit here and go through all the questions and decide we'll discuss it when we come back. So is there anyone else who interprets it differently? Susan, what do you think they're asking? I'm sorry, my phone was ringing and I was sending someone a message at the same time you were talking, so I didn't. What do you think this question means?
It's very clear. I don't think it's very clear, but I think it's just saying, is there sufficient guidance on how marks are verified when they go in the clearinghouse?
Okay. All right. So then if that's what you think this question means, then I'll leave it to you to craft a question, if you don't mind, that says that clearer. And then once we see the question, the group can agree or disagree. Are you willing to do that for me, Susan?
Sorry, I was saying okay with my thing on mute.
Okay. All right, now let's move to question two. Is the protection of the TMCH too broad? Is the TMCH providing too much protection for those with a trademark on a generic or descriptive dictionary word? Mary.
Hi, JSCON, everyone. Just to point out that one of the comments from the working group call last week was that this question 2 could perhaps be combined with question 4 because they seem to cover a similar type of scope.
Kurt.
Yeah, so Mary's right, and I think she also has an excellent suggestion in her comments to make this kind of a overview question and put some of the other questions underneath it.
Okay, I can't see her comment, so I'm happy with that. Does anyone disagree with that suggestion?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Kurt.
Okay. Well, my second comment was to make it a little more neutral, so not say providing too much protection, but just the right protection or adequate protection, and the same thing with question 4. Make that we want to ensure that individual registrants are not losing legitimate rights.
Okay. I see Kathy's hand is up.
True. We do want to make sure they're not losing legitimate rights, but these two questions kind of raise different different aspects. So I'd hate to combine them and lose some of the nuances. Happy to combine them and keep it. But one of the questions has to do with the legitimate protections of trademarks and kind of the limits of those protections. And so it's not just protections for registrants, potential, current and future, but also, is the balance here working? Do trademark owners have more protection or less protection in what we're providing than they might in the real world? So I really like the category of balance here, and I think it's a good idea to combine it with other questions below, but hate to lose the nuances. I think these questions kind of cut at similar issues from different perspectives. Thanks.
Susan?
I think we need to be careful about saying are trademark owners being given more protection than they'd be given in the real world. That wasn't the purpose of these. Preventing that was not the purpose of the RPMs. The purpose of the RPMs was to address the substantial additional opportunities for cyber squatting that would arise in TLDs, and to try to minimize the cost and the admin burden for the brand owner. So I just think we need to be careful about the language that we're using in the question and be a bit more neutral.
Thank you. Kathy?
With great respect for Susan, I don't agree. I really think from the beginning, certainly from the very beginning, the IRT, it was about protection for trademark owners. But once it got to the SDI, my recollection, and I lived and breathed that group for 6 weeks or more, was that it was about balance, trying to make sure that what we were doing in the ICANN community did reflect the balance of the real world. So I would hate to lose that. We can, of course, bring these into what's considered more neutral, but it seems like a fair question. Is the protection of the Trademark Clearinghouse too broad? We've heard that question.
I want to get delve into some things real quick, and I want to raise my hand and not be taking chair prerogative and talk about some nomenclature. First of all, the Trademark Clearinghouse provides no protection. None. Sunrise does. Claims may, but the clearinghouse provides no protection. It is merely a database. Secondly, with regard to this question, here we go again with the nomenclature that just drives me bananas. There is no such thing as a generic term. There is a term that is generic when it is applied to goods and services in the sense of the trademark world, but there's no such thing as a generic term. There are dictionary terms. There are fanciful terms, Xerox. But there is no such thing as a generic term. So I want that out of this question. I'm happy to talk about dictionary terms all day long, but I'm not going to talk about generic terms because that is incorrect.
Jay Scott, can I cite the International Trademark Association? Generic terms are common words or terms often found in the dictionary that identify products and services and are not specific to any particular source.
But that is only in regards to trademarks, not in regards to the world. There is no such thing outside of trademark law as a generic term. There is a dictionary term.
But
a dictionary term is generic when it is applied to goods and services. Car is generic for automobiles. Apple is generic for apples. Apple is not generic with regards to computers. It is a dictionary term.
But generic terms is a commonly understood and used term for a group of services or products provided.
I think it is a commonly understood term by trademark attorneys. But I think when I listen and read blogs put out by civil libertarians, 90% of them can't pull their head far enough out of their ass to understand. They don't know, and they misstate it all the time.
Jay Scott, I think you're crossing over the neutrality border. And
no, I'm not being – I said I'm not being chair here. I am advocating as Adobe.
In trademark law, you can never register a generic term for a generic purpose. That's how you refer to it. You can come up with a million other words, but that's the best way to describe it, and that's the way it's always been described in the articles and in other materials. Generic words cannot be registered for generic purposes. That's and using the word dictionary term does
yes,
not
but Kathy,
does not
when we had our call the other week, you specifically started talking about generic terms like freedom when it comes to freedom and trust, and those aren't generic terms in the abstract. Freedom is a generic term if what I was doing was I was offering services to liberate people from oppressive governments. But freedom as to genes or to perfume is not generic. And you started talking about the fact that you were highly disturbed by the fact that all these quote-unquote generic terms were being taken by. But they're not generic terms. They're only generic terms in context of how they're being used. And so that's what bothers me, is you start classifying them as some sort of generic term that belongs to the civil libertarian community, and that is incorrect.
Wait, I never said anything about anything belonging. I just said you don't get to take it out.
But you kept saying that it was a generic term, and it is not a generic term unless you see it in context. And I'll look at the transcript, but you said that. You called it a trust, peace, freedom, love, I think were the terms you said. And you said these generic terms are being used, removed from the lexicon. And that is incorrect. They're only being removed from the lexicon if it is freedom for genes, freedom for perfume, and it is not a generic term. Because in that sense, it's been classified as registered as a trademark by a government for the goods and services it's registered. So
I think
sure that we are really clear intellectually here about what we're speaking about.
I think we're combining two things. One was that 9 of the 10 words being that the analysis group found were most heavily used during the trademark claims period were basic dictionary terms. And the other is that I am concerned about the use of generic terms that the person making – you can use milk for children's clothing and wind up perhaps blocking it or other forms from all the groups that would be using it in the industry of milk producers as a commodity, as a generic term. That and that there are basic words like liberty.
But I think
that was an email, and so you can get the transcript, but you won't see it because I followed up and did the research on freedom, trust, liberty.
But again, we're not talking about generic terms. We're talking about dictionary terms that in certain instances can be trademarked and in certain instances would be generic. But milk is not a generic term in the abstract.
But it is a generic term for milk
as
producers,
milk
providers, exactly.
As applied to milk products, but not as applied to jewelry, not as applied to computers, not as applied to automobiles. That's the reason I think we have to be careful about our nomenclature. We're dominating this discussion, and I think Susan has her hand up.
Sure.
Yeah, I wanted to address it in the context of what the question is asking, which is talking about protection of TMCH grants, and is the TMCH giving too much protection for generic terms or descriptive dictionary words. I'd favor the use of descriptive dictionary words in this type of scenario. But I think what we really, the real issue is that this isn't a question about the TMCH. This is a question about the Sunrise, potentially, and a question about the claims, potentially. But it's not actually a question about the TMCH, because actually it doesn't really matter if there's a, what Kathy is perceiving as a generic term being in the TMCH. It only matters if, when used in context, in a particular registry context, it's perhaps, it may matter, perhaps, if it's blocking some other descriptive use in the context of the registry because of what the brand owner chooses to register as a domain name. I think perhaps, you know, we could stop having this argument if we were actually to move this question to be a question about the Sunrise and a question about the claims. It still needs redrafting to be less biased and more neutral, but I think that's the problem with the question. Is actually what we're asking the question of, and it's not an issue about the Trademark Clearinghouse.
Okay, I think I liked the suggestion that Kurt had about using one question as a overarching question, and then maybe having sub questions under that that relate back to the overall question. So, I mean, we might, you know, something to the point of, you know, Are the rights protection mechanisms that stem from the TMCH too broad, or something like that, and then ask the questions underneath that. I think number, was it four we said would come in there, and then organizing them that way to do sub-questions to get to more specific issues of how it might be. So in other words, I think, Kathy, when we were looking at the question before, is if you answer yes to the top, the chapeau question, then you would go down in the sub questions and drill down into the specifics of how it might be too broad. That seems to me to be a way we could organize them and keep them, as Kathy suggested earlier, sort of grouped together by subject matter. Is that something that people think they could get behind? Okay, Kathy likes the idea of grouping. Is there any way we can have someone, I'm happy to have staff do it, or I'm happy to have people who feel like Kathy feels very passionate about the idea of not losing the nuance and making sure that the things that go to what defines what type of protections are in or stem from the information that's in the clearinghouse. If Susan, I mean, if Kathy, if you want to come to us with a suggested grouping, and then we can then work on wording and those kinds of things, or would we prefer to have staff do that? I see Mary's hand is up.
Hi, JSCON, everyone. We had a similar question. One of what staff can do between today and tomorrow is take the look back to the source questions as far as we can and turn this document into more of a table so that we would replicate these questions potentially in the categories that can be agreed on or that we have here that Paul suggested, and next to each one basically have another column that says where this came from with a brief comment on the context, if we can squeeze that in. We can also, if you like, make a note that certain questions, because I mean, we don't know if we can get through all the questions today, but we can also note that certain questions might need to be rephrased or moved around. So if that would be helpful to the group, we can get that circulated by tomorrow and folks can take a look at it, and then maybe people can divide up whichever questions require further editing and so forth. Of course, staff can do all that as well, but
Yeah, I think that that's true. And I think if everyone's comfortable with that, that sounds like a good way forward. Because I think, you know, I definitely want to make sure that we try as best we can to include all the questions that came from the community. Now, and I think it's also important that if we alter the question in any way or revise it or change it, that we're very clear on documenting what we did and why we did it. Because I don't want anyone to think that this group didn't take the questions from the community as seriously as we should, And, you know, so I like that approach. Is there anyone that disagrees with that approach? Kurt.
I do not disagree with that approach, but that's not why I raised my hand. Maybe we can resolve this sort of controversy in questions 2 and 4 by making them even simpler. And what we're trying to do is avoid bad results, I think, in both these things. So, so this really goes to, you know, in the operation of the Trademark Clearinghouse through Claims and Sunrise, are there areas where trademarks are inadequately protected? And in the operation of the Clearinghouse and Trademark and Claims, are there instances where the legitimate rights of others to domain names are trampled? And so should we make corrections based on a failure of the Clearinghouse operation to the policy? Either has it either failed trademark owners or has it failed individuals in some way? That's what
right.
I think. Right.
Or has it succeeded in the purpose for which it was designed, right? And that's the balance because, you know, it was designed, according to Kathy, once it came out of the STI, to take advantage of the balance that is in the real world. And so maybe that's the question that we need to ask. But I do think
I think it's a lot harder to define success than, you know, if you can point out where, you know, a trademark owner had a legitimate right and it wasn't protected because of something. And it might be okay to point out, anecdotally, you know, instances where individuals had legitimate rights to names, but they couldn't obtain them. So you can do an analysis on that. But to ask I think Jay's got your questions better, but I think it's kind of almost impossible to answer the.
Yeah, I'm happy to look at anything as long as we can get a consensus that we're seeking the information that was originally sought, that all we're doing is improving the question, and that we're making sure that we're being as balanced as possible. And that means I am going to demand, outside of my chair role, as the Adobe role, as the former president of INTA, and as a drafter of the IRT, that the question remained as balanced too, not just the end result. So, but I'm happy to look at any language anyone wants to put forward and consider it and let us all consider it a group because this is a consensus process and we all have to agree that that balance is there and that the wording that we put forward contains that. I see, Kurt, is your hand still up? And then I have Kathy. Not hearing from Kurt, I'm going to call on Kathy.
Okay. So I think we're moving towards something, which is I like Kurt's rephrasing of kind of a bigger picture. Has the TMCH, say, process, for lack of a better word, failed registrants? Has it failed trademark owners? That is a good way to put it. As a matter of process, I want to suggest, since people in the working group have been looking at these questions, as has staff, for so long, for so many months, maybe a way to do it is to put in, first to do the sorting that we're talking about and kind of the umbrella questions that we're talking about, and maybe we were already thinking about this, keep the original questions underneath it. And that way people can see how we've rephrased it. They can see what the original questions were. We can hear from the working group if they disagree. But it's a way to kind of gently move people in the direction of, of kind of overarching questions. In terms of registrants, I think we should qualify it as current and future. So kind of, you know, what are we, you know, the future registrants, all the people who will be registering in the future. Thanks, Jay Scott.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. One thing that we did in a working group I was in before, and I think Mary hit on it, is let's create a table. And the table would have the original question, the reason we all, if it was revised or not, the reasoning for why we revised it or not, and what the ultimate question is. And that will be a part of our work history that would be publicly available for anyone to see. Secondly, with regards to Kathy's phrasing of the questions of have we failed, I think that's a bad way to ask information because you're asking a negative. I think the better way to ask the question is, has the TMCH succeeded to provide what it was designed for? And you can ask that. Has it succeeded in providing what it's designed for registrants? Has it for future and past? Has it succeeded with what it was designed for with regards to trademark owners? And again, I think the TMCH is the wrong question. It should be the Sunriser claims because the TMCH doesn't offer any kind of protection. Kathy, I see your hand is up again.
Yeah. Then we get into a fight as to what, if we use your phrasing, and I just copied down Kurt's phrasing. Sorry if I got that wrong. Then we get into a fight of what it was intended for. So has it served current and potential, is it serving current and potential registrants? Is it serving trademark owners?
I get it. I'm going to let Susan speak, and then I'm going to make a chair decision with regards to this. Susan?
Yeah, hi. I just typed the chat. The preamble on the TMCH says that the STI recognizes that a trademark clearinghouse could serve as a convenient location to store registered trademark information in a centralized location on behalf of trademark holders and could create efficiencies for trademark owners as well as registries who will benefit from having one centralized database from which to interact, et cetera, et cetera. That's the purpose of the TMCH.
Okay. Here's what I suggest we do. I suggest that we allow staff to create the table that I've just suggested, and that in doing so, they group the questions. And I'm fine if you want to color code them into certain groups. And all I want you to do now is to group them and to list them in a table with regards to what the current questions are. And then as we move forward with our work, we can answer the question, are we going to revise or not? Then once we decide that, we can decide why, and we can put that in our reasoning column, and then we can put the revised question. And I think that's what we leave this call with, an understanding that that's what we're going to do. And then we regroup once that's been done, and then we can take the groups of questions one at a time, and then we can have a discussion about whether we think there's consensus to revise. And once that consensus decision has been made, then we can have the debates and reach consensus on what it should be revised to. And then the last thing we'll do is come to an understanding and an agreement on why we revised it and how we're going to express that so that it becomes a part of the record. That would be my suggestion, just to keep us orderly, because I don't think we should start wordsmithing yet today, and I think we need to see questions grouped together so that we can see if things are duplicative, if there's a better way of doing it, those kinds of things. So that would be my suggestion. And I see Kathy agrees with me, and I want everyone to watch. We do agree on occasion. And then I see that Susan Payne agrees. I just think that's the best way to go forward. If we can do that, I think it'll organize our work for us, and then we can push forward. Is there anyone who disagrees with that? Okay. Now, what I want to tell you, members of this group, is if there's a group of questions that you find that you are particularly interested in or you have great concerns about, I will call upon you to be a drafter of the revised questions that you would present to the group. And you can present them along with your rationale for why you've changed them. But that way, we give everyone an opportunity to deal with the things that they think are most important, and you get to express your viewpoints. And you're not covered up, because I do have a tendency to step out of my role as chair and be bombastic at times. But that doesn't mean that I don't appreciate, nor that I do not want to hear other perspectives, because this is a consensus process. And at the end of the day, we can't put out any work unless we all agree that that's where we're going to end up. And I am committed to making sure we do that. Okay? With that, I think we can close this call and give ourselves back 15 minutes unless anyone has someone else. I see Mary's hand has come up.
We did have a follow-up question, J. Scott and everybody, which is that we will do our best, as I said in the chat, to create the table with the additional context and extra columns for whatever clarifications and changes we're going to make, and we can send that to you, I'm going to say, by tomorrow. Given the time that we have and given that we are 2 weeks out from Hyderabad, David and I were wondering if it would be feasible for this subgroup to take the Friday slot that we normally use for the other TMCH subteam so that you can have your next call this Friday, seeing that next week is the week before Hyderabad, and I believe, J. Scott, you might be out yourself as well.
I am out Friday as well, but Ms. Kleiman is on the phone, and I'm sure she'd be happy to chair if she has the time. I see her hand is up, so I'm going to allow her to speak.
I would hate to hold the call without you, J. Scott, but I do have that slot reserved for...
Well, then I think you should go ahead. I'm on a plane to Rome, and I'm going to be in such a good mood. You all do what you want, and I'll scream about it later.
Then have lots of drinks and toast our success, please. I do have two comments to make. Is this a good time?
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be great to see people in the chat room whether 11 a.m. was the data gathering subgroup. Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern time was the data gathering subgroup's time slot, and that group is wrapping up its work and won't be meeting this week. So the question is whether people could make that call time. I think Susan can, which is great. Okay, so in terms of verification and validation, and sorry if I can't see it in the agenda notes in the tiny print, but I think we have an action item of adding some of the design mark questions that have come in under verification and qualification and verification.
I don't have a problem with adding anything that we think, okay. Just get it all into the table. Kathy, if you have suggestions, send it to Mary, and we'll get it in the table, and we can have the debate of whether it should or shouldn't be as we
right.
go through the grouping of questions.
And the other thing in terms of the Trademark Clearinghouse database, and I just thought I'd mention it, and then we can give people back 10 minutes of their time, is there are private purposes. This database, in addition to Sunrise and trademark claims, is also being used for private purposes. So something in the Trademark Clearinghouse database can be blocked in 200 top-level domains, and we're seeing it. So I think we always have to include private purposes, too. And, I think Paul Keating's comment that what this was intended for and what this is being used for may be different. So just an
and
overall comment.
That's something
Thank
that
you.
We definitely need to explore.
Great.
Susan?
And, J. Scott, I want to wish you a great vacation.
Okay. Susan? Is your hand down now? Okay. So with that, I'm going to give everybody their time back. I think we know what we're going to do. We'll get these things circulated tomorrow for a call at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, and that's 8 Eastern Pacific Daylight Time, and I think it's 10 Central Daylight Time, and I'm afraid I can't calculate for Europe. So if there's anybody, Susan, I think you're 8 hours ahead of me, so that would put it around 4 or 5 in the afternoon for you. But let's just go ahead and do that, and you all go and hold this call without me, and I'll just monitor by email. All right. Thank you, Kathy, for agreeing to take over that call on Friday. Thank you, Mary, for all your help, and let's continue to push forward. I think we're headed in the right direction. Ciao.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much. The meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recordings and disconnect all remaining lines. Have a great day, everyone.